kind of on class 3 Corinthians. Here we go.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, how are you?
Nice to see you.
Morning,
yeah.
Yeah, for a few days.
Well, next Saturday.
See the grandkids, huh?
See you. My husband went down to Lubbock to be flew out yesterday to be with a reunion with his brothers. They're coming in from Pennsylvania and Hawaii and Eastern Tennessee.
Picked the scenic spot in Lubbock.
Yeah. Oh, that's where he went to college, from Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
So you came down?
So, yeah, they both came in to St. Louis.
We drove in here and then he flew out yesterday.
Okay. Welcome to St. Louis.
Thank you. Got there safely and everything.
Great. Well, do you have any problems,
No.
Your son or grand?
They're all doing it.
Just let us know. We'll take care of you.
Dan and Jeff and Stuart were all flying Friday and Saturday.
Trying to get the airline business back up to
par
here. Well, this is a class on Corinthians. We took a little break for the last week or two because of family encampment last week and the week before that, the tragedy that hit New York. So I need some time to process on that. So I thought maybe we just take a couple of minutes and review just to kind of, before we head into chapter 2 of 1 Corinthians. First class, we talked about this little introduction. Paul's introduction to the book, as you guys remembered, was pretty positive. It was a very Thanksgiving type of approach compared to some of the problems he's going to have to hit the church on. You guys remember just from chapter 1, there was the Corinth church had a power struggle within, at least from the membership standpoint. Within the church, they were having marital problems, as we see from later chapters. They were having some several other problems as well, from sensuality and some other things that he was having to address throughout the book. But and as Alan had addressed the background of Greece and Corinth in the first century, it had Romans in that seaport, it had Greeks. And it had lots of Jews who were just expelled from Rome. So they had quite a hodgepodge of cultures and of backgrounds there. And as you guys also remember, I think Jason brought up that Corinth was quite a commercial seaport between the two seas. A boat could go either along the Mediterranean, could go up to hit northern Greece and the Macedonian and connect to the east or to the west, and Corinth was basically right between those two seas. If a boat didn't want to have to go all the way around each time, it could connect right through there, through the Ionian Sea and the Aegean Sea. My world history, my own geography isn't real good. I have to look those up. So, Athens, as you remember, as Alan said, was only located maybe 50 miles due east, so there's quite a bit of competition between the two cities, and quite a considerable influence as well with the Greek mythology that was going on, and you can see in Acts chapter 17 and 18 what Paul encountered, some of the gods and Greek mythology that went on. Also, there was quite a few developments in the Greek culture. Of course, democracy that we see today has changed some, but it really had its roots back in the Greek civilization way before Christ. But going with that, democracy is the ability for people to express each other and differ on opinions, but yet still live peaceably with each other. And it sounds so simple, doesn't it, in a society like America, which, not that we're perfect or anything, but we allow people to have differing opinions, and not be shot for it or imprisoned necessarily just because of the opinion. Now, if they act on that opinion in some sort of oppressive way, and that's a different story, but you're still allowed to have an opinion that's different. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Even within the church itself, we have a lot of different opinions that this democracy, we need to continue to refine it and respect each other because we have differing spiritual gifts and we have different backgrounds, and we all bring different things to the table. We can help each other. But the Greeks also brought quite a legal system, advanced legal system,
Good morning.
That was quite up to date. That they had quite a few jurors, and so we think our legal system, it takes a long time to get through a case. Now it's a lot more then, because they had, you know, like 90, 100 jurors that would debate issues. Compared to now, it's about 12 or so. So anyway, it just gives a little bit of review. One other point, too, if you guys remember, it's kind of interesting. We threw out towards the end of the first class that the church is sort of a laboratory in a way. I just threw that word out, and we had those different perceptions, and I know you brought up the point that sometimes labs, if it's not run very well, it is not a very good reflection of what real life is all about. Okay. So, and that can be the case if you have a scientist running a lab over at WashU and they are doing something very theoretical and they're not in the least good using real-life applications. It can be a bad representation of real life. On the other hand, if you have good scientists, in which Dwayne Simmons was saying, that you take extra precaution to make sure your laboratory is a reflection of real life so you can carry over what you learn in the lab out to real life, then it makes a lot of sense in it. And that's probably the difference between a good church and a church that may not be as strong. And that's that we bring real-life situations into our church, and we're very open about it, whether it's marital conflict or whether it which is very normal, whether it's following certain kind of leadership within the church or outside the church, even in our employment situations, or raising children, or a lot of different real-life situations, bringing into the and discussing and processing within and among Christians here at Mid-County, and processing and realizing, okay, our goal is to follow Jesus, yes. Our goal is to love others from a deeper level, yes. Now here is a real-life situation, and process it versus maybe never ever getting to the nuts and bolts. And whereas we talked about, Paul could have just said, hey, I know you guys are having these problems in the Corinth church, but let's just talk about Jesus. Let's just ignore him. Well, how can we practice how, in a practical way, to love each other if we don't get to the nuts and bolts? So anyway, that was we brought that up a couple weeks ago, and we had some process time the second week just for the terrorist attack, and Alan talked a little bit about fears and Psalms, and then also I just had a couple scriptures on the board. We didn't really talk about it on 1 Corinthians 15, where it's dealing with our fears. And maybe we can have another class to talk about this, maybe not. And I think it's really neat how we can live our life in spite of our fears, or we can live our life to avoid our fears. So we can, depending on how we address our fears. Fears are a normal part of life. But the greatest fear that Jesus said we have, that he conquered, was the fear of death. And it's kind of like, how can we see tragedy like what happened in New York, or tragedy that a child gets run over by a car, or a tragedy that someone loses a job, or whatever. How can we handle tragedy or stress like that in difficult times as a Christian? And realizing that if Jesus handled the greatest fear there was, and that was he took the sting out of death itself, then Jesus probably has some answers for us in all those day-to-day tragedies. We can't always explain them, why they're there, but maybe we can have a little more peace and comfort from a God that understands and has addressed the greatest fear that there isn't. Okay, well, and that brings us up to chapter 2, where we're going to cover today. And the title in our syllabus or what have you is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So the good and the bad, we'll talk about the ugly. That has something to do with the instructors. So. No, that's just a catch the same. But anyway, today's Paul talks a lot about different kind of contrasts. And we have a lot of contrasts today. Just to make points, we talk about black versus white. You talk about short versus tall. You talk about thin versus heavy. And we talk about good versus evil, you know. And we talk about busy versus not busy. You know, there's always extremes. Obviously, in true life, we have gray areas. You know, we have balance. But to make points, sometimes it's always easy to look at these extremes. And so today we'll talk about and sorry about the way I write. I got a straight line, I can't. Straight. But anyway, today we're going to talk about some of these contrasts that Paul brought up in chapter 2. And maybe we can open up the books and get right into it, right into the text here. So we need a couple of readers. Okay, Dan, want to read? Okay.
Whole thing?
Sure, go ahead.
To chapter 2?
Yeah.
When I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come proclaiming the mystery of God to you, lofty words or wisdom. For I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. But I came to you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. My speech and my proclamation were not plausible words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might rest not on human wisdom, but on the power of God. Yet among the mature we do speak wisdom, though it is not a wisdom of this age or of the rulers of this age who are doomed to perish. But we speak God's wisdom, secret and hidden, which God decreed before the ages for our glory. None of the rulers of this age understood this, for if they had, they would have crucified the Lord. They would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the human heart conceived, what God has prepared for those who loved Him, these things God has revealed to us through the Spirit. For the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. For what human being knows what is truly human except the human spirit that is within? So also no one comprehends what is truly God's except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit that is from God, so that we may understand the gifts bestowed on us by God. And we speak of these things in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual things to those who are spiritual. Those who are unspiritual do not receive the gifts of God's Spirit, for they are foolishness to them, and they are unable to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. Those who are spiritual discern all things, and they are themselves subject to no one else's scrutiny. For who has known the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ.
Okay. Great. Well, first of all, I thought maybe we can start off, and Alan's going to go a little farther on this, but what is the first contrast we talked about, verse 14 and 15 and various other places, two kinds of minds, the natural mind and the spiritual mind. Okay. And we all obviously have a natural part of our mind that comes from background. So we all grew up in a different place. Some people grew up in Nebraska or something. How could I possibly think the same way? I grew up in Indiana, you know, we just have our differences. Did you grow up in Tennessee?
Cincinnati? Memphis and in Denver.
In Denver, okay. So we all have our little backgrounds that we carry along. It's good, a lot of good things, and sometimes it might be a little bit prejudiced, is the way we think. You know, some people grew up in a big family. I grew up in a family of 11, you know, people who grew up in a big family, you know. Small families?
Only child,
okay. You know, that is a huge contrast, the way we form our ideas and think. And, you know, some of us, most of us here are Caucasian, okay? Most of us grew up here in America, I guess. A lot of us know people who grew up from different countries, different parts of even the country that have a lot of ideas that were formed. And, some people grew up in counties, some grew up in inner cities. So, you know, there's a lot of backgrounds that make us think differently and bring a lot of good things to the table, and also some things that may prevent us from knowing God, too. So that's something that that we have to be aware of, I guess, even as a Christian, even though we believe who Jesus is and who God is, we also realize that we can limit God from our backgrounds if we're not careful too. So, but anyway, the other side is the spiritual mind. The spiritual mind that how we can take, God takes our natural background and expands it to understand this great, incredible God we have that worships and loves us. Not worships us, but we should worship Him and desires us to worship Him and loves us from in a very intimate level. And how in the world can we understand a God like that when we grow up in a society that loves to, you know, bang, blow things up, you know, who's the best, and we like to build great things, which is fine, but then we have a God that's a spiritual God, that's an intangible God sometimes, a God that's inside us, or a God that's wanting to peck at our heart and our mind, something that we can't always measure. We can't always see a person walking down the street. That's a person who loves God. Well, we can't really tell. We have to get to know him because God sometimes, from the outside, we can't tell what a person's like until we see what's on the inside. So, and then just a couple things, and then Alan will take over here. Other kinds of contrasts. We have two kinds of wisdom. Verses 4 and 7 there. Man's wisdom versus God's wisdom. And obviously getting advanced education using our education and our wisdom and experience is very important, but also realizing that all this knowledge that we have from colleges and universities and experience came, God, it's like a fraction of what God understands. And it's foolishness compared to what God, chapter 1 says. And then there's other two kinds of sources of information, sources of life, verses 9 through 12, you can look at. And then, of course, what we do with all these two kinds of are results oriented. So, Alan will start hitting on some of these, what a spiritual mind is, and what we do with some very applications on those type of contrasts. Hey, Alan.
We're all prepared. This is going to get a little emotional, so. I guess this is, you know, if you have any kids at school, you know, one of the things on the supply list is every kid has to bring in 2 boxes of Kleenex. So this is probably the result of it. It's not for our class. I wanted to look a little bit more at the two different types of minds that Paul presents here, the spiritual mind versus the worldly mind. And one of the things that I've heard people say and has really kind of stuck with me is you are what you think, or what's in your heart is what comes out. And sometimes I look at my life and I think, what is it that I'm really thinking about? What is it when I'm all alone, what do I think about? Is it spiritual things or worldly things? And sometimes it concerns me because even this morning in the shower, I got up in the shower and I found myself thinking about the brakes in the van. Right. You know, I think, okay, I really should be thinking about this class, getting ready, getting my mind in a spiritual frame. And here I am, it's the end of the shower, and all I've thought about are the brakes on the van. What is wrong with me, you know? Is that really what's in my heart? Is that what's on my mind? So anyway, I think that, I guess probably my main point, if I have a point here, is that this is a very encouraging verse. When you're struggling with, and if you have any doubts, you're doubting what's on your mind, and so let me explain why I think this is so encouraging. What I'm talking about here is mostly in verses 14 and 15. The man without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The spiritual man makes judgments about all things, but he himself is not subject to any man's judgment. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. And I guess that's the last part of the verse is what's really encouraging to me is we have the mind of Christ. And even though I was thinking about brakes this morning, what really encourages me is that there are times in my life when I'm struggling for an answer. I'm really deeply concerned about something one of my sons has done, and I'm just searching for what is, you know, what is it that he's done, and how can I respond to him? And that's when I pray, and that's when I can really feel the Spirit of God within me give me an insight or give me an answer. And I'm looking in here, but we have the mind of Christ. And boy, what an encouragement when you really do feel the Spirit of God that's in your hearts and in your minds give you that answer. And, you know, I'm not even concerned what was the answer that he gave me, but the feeling of comfort and strength that I get when the Spirit does move inside me. And so another thing that really encouraged me about that is that this contrast here between the worldly mind versus a spiritual mind. If I'm worried that what comes up to me naturally, what comes to my mind are worldly things, well, that's because I live in the world and I do have to take care of the brakes in the car. But I don't want to condemn myself because that's what popped into my head this morning, because it says in here, I am able to discern godly things because the Spirit is in me. He may not be there every single second of the day because, it's like I said, we do live in the world and we have to deal with the things that come up. But man, that is a great encouragement to me. I am not like the man, I'm trying to be proud here, but it says, if the Spirit is not in me, I could not accept the things that come from God. And I know that the Spirit gives me answers and guides my life and helps me understand God's will. And so that's just a real comfort to me, knowing that the Spirit is in me. In 2 Corinthians 5:17, I think it is, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone and the new has come. We really aren't, when we're in Christ, we have a new life in the Spirit. We're not just redone or rebuilt or remanufactured like my brakes are going to be this afternoon. Still thinking about brakes. We're a new creation. The old is gone and the new has come. The Spirit lives in us. And so I wanted to turn over to Ephesians. Take a quick look at Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 17, and then we'll open it up for some discussion. Ephesians 5, 17, therefore do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. And that understanding what the Lord's will is what the Spirit of God does for us. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. We are people who have spiritual minds. So, real briefly, I'll look at two things here in the rest of this chapter. We're not even going to really read the rest of the chapter, but being filled with the Spirit and understanding what the Lord's will is leads us to, later on, in two ways, being thankful to God for everything and being submissive. And these are two ways that you can do maybe a little checks and balances on keeping the spiritual side versus the worldly side. Giving thanks here in verse 19, it talks about speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Sing and make music in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks to God for everything. Daily prayer time at meals with your children, having your kids or your spouse or whoever you happen to be with know that you are thankful for things, whether it's a prayer or just your attitude at work. Are you thankful for your job or you complain about your job? All these little different ways that thanksgiving to God for everything can come out. And then submission. If you go through the rest of this chapter, then in the early part of 6, Paul talks about being submissive to your wives and to your husbands. Children being submissive to your parents. And then even slaves and masters, which I usually in my mind translate to on the job. if the Spirit of God is with me, if I'm a spiritual mind versus a worldly mind at work, that's going to really affect the way that I do my job. Am I going to be complaining? Am I going to be a willing worker? Now, I often don't even see my boss, so you know, I can say I do what my boss does, but my boss, well, you know, whatever my boss tells me, he doesn't often tell me what to do, which is kind of neat. But still, am I a willing worker? And I can contrast that with people at work who really aren't willing workers. And so anyway, that's helped me out. What do you guys think about spiritual mind versus worldly mind? Are you, any examples you can think of that really stick out when that spiritual mind, what is it when you, or what do you think about when you think of the spiritual mind?
Specific example I think of is recently with the bombing, is that, you know, spiritual mind, one way we've gone to it is we think, okay, time and history is more than just this physical world. So we got, instead of a lot of nation, I guess, they sought spiritual help, you know. It was to say, okay, we've got this tragedy in a context bigger than just this specific event, and, you know, the nation went to God, and that was good. But I think that's an example of a spiritual mind that says, okay, what's justice? Just the way we deal with that process is involving God's ways in this. And the other tragedies you mentioned, you know, we know that time doesn't end when, you know, time doesn't end here. It's just this period of time. It's a transformational point, like you mentioned earlier in 2 Corinthians. So to me, that's an example that time takes a different perspective, and then these current events have been examples of that.
I think that on the first points, there's like 3 points you bring it up, I think, is that for us to allow the Spirit to lead us, the Holy Spirit, not just our own spirit, is the first one, is 19, verse 19, speak to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, and sing and make music in your heart. And the second one is verse 20, always being thankful to God. I mean, how, that's not easy sometimes in the 5 o'clock news if you watch it much. It's got a lot of killing on it, a lot of negative stuff, you know, and it really is direct contrast to being thankful to God with what we do have. Now, it's not to ignore the bad things. And then the third thing is, like Alan says, the attitude of submission. But anyway, I think the first thing is speaking to one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. To me, we carry in both our cars a lot of contemporary Christian music on our cassettes because we try to listen to the radio a little bit. Once a negative tune starts, you know, hitting us, we pop in one of those tapes. It's got some good, encouraging music in there. And that's because I know whatever comes into our mind comes out somewhere down the road in some relationship or among our kids or among my speech later in the day. So it's kind of like, it's not like, okay, now I have a spiritual mind. It's like it's a continual process of fighting it. Be spiritual. Be open to God's Spirit.
The last comment I have to make, and then I'll turn it back over to Ben, is the contrast between the worldly and the spiritual mind brings to my mind a book that I just got finished reading by Jimmy Carter called Living Faith. And he's always been one of my favorite presidents for two reasons, not all policy put aside. Number one, because he was an engineer. The only president, I think, who's been an engineer. And number two, because even as a president, even back when he was a president afterwards, it was clear that his Christianity meant something to him, at least from what we could see. And then in reading his book called Living Faith, is really the story of his life before, during, and after presidency, and his insight into how he let the Spirit of God move him while he was governor of Georgia, president of the United States. And I thought to myself, wow, what a really neat thing. This guy was arguably the most powerful man in the world at the time that he was president of the United States. And yet, to the best of his ability, he was letting the Spirit of God lead him as he led our nation. I thought, what a powerful thing. I'm obviously not going to be president of the United States, but yet I'm in charge of my family, and I'm leading my family and the people that are around me. And so anyway, that was a really, he's been a good example for me of how to take whatever situation you're in, whether it's as powerful as the president or just as humble as the father and parents of kids and husband of a family, and how the Spirit of God can help you in that. So,
you know, we had the opportunity to hear him teach a Sunday school class.
Did you?
We did. We went to an elder hostel in North Georgia, mm-hmm. and spent the weekend in Americus, and then went to St. Simon's Island for another elder hostel. It was all a package thing. And on Sunday, we went to Plains, mm-hmm. and they said that, you know, they didn't know whether he would be there or not, but we went to Plains and went around where he lived and went to Sunday school, and he and Mrs. Carter and one of their grandsons were there, and he taught the Sunday school class, and it really was very, the Secret Service people were there, you know, it really was interesting. I'm practically, our whole elder hostel group went, which included many different faiths, really, many different types of Christians, many Jewish people, and I think it really was interesting just to hear him get up and teach from the Bible, and it was not off the cuff. You know, he had prepared for it, and I really think his sincerity showed through. You know, he had moved from his old congregation to a new one because the old congregation at one point wouldn't admit blacks. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, at a time when most churches were. I mean, it was past the desegregation thing and all. But it really was interesting to hear him. And they were just absolutely down to earth as we walked out. You know, they just spoke to everybody and everybody spoke to them just like you do in a church service. They spoke to their grandson. I mean, you know, he was doing something that, you know, it was just a normal family, it really was interesting.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have really, I want to plan a road trip down there, maybe this fall even. In fact, if I wasn't teaching this class, I probably would have already planned it.
Well, they say that he's there at that time, which was maybe, I don't remember how long ago, 4 or 5 years ago, that he was there about 80% of the time.
They have a list on their church's website of which Sundays he's supposed to be teaching the class. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd really like to organize some type of trip down there for a long weekend. I don't know whether it involves driving or taking the train or whatever. But
it's not terribly far, really.
The hills just went down to Fort Benning, which is about an hour closer, and they said it's about a 10 or 11 hour drive. So, anyway, that's a sideline. I want to try to organize that trip.
I thought maybe we can talk a little bit. We're kind of half asleep. I am. But in this Ephesians chapter 5, being filled with the Spirit, there's a lot of good examples from verse 21 all the way into chapter 6, like Alan was saying about how to be filled with the Spirit. Practical examples that Paul talks about. First he talks about the marital situation, then he talks about parent-child situation. Then he identifies as master slave, which we can say is employer employee type of relationship, and how the importance of an attitude of submissiveness is to have the allow the Spirit to work through us. And I thought maybe one area we could start with is parenting. And just because we don't have children right now doesn't mean we're not parents. We got children within the county that you guys are big brothers, big sisters to. You're parents in essence. We need your help. So you can. We all have examples of that. Not that maybe we can draw on some of your experiences. How, even though we're in our mid ages, some of us, you know, maybe, or whatever, and maybe this is Christ, you can share some insight on the importance of letting our children show that we're a submissive teacher. As a parent, and not just a militant dictatorial. And I don't know if one is helping that up. I think that'd be a great example of how we can carry.
I had an example just the other day about admitting to your kids that you're certainly fallible and can be just as wrong as your kids are, and being willing to admit it and and ask for forgiveness. We were at a restaurant, and Peter and Sean, of course, were kind of getting at it. And Sean was reaching over and taking Peter's food without even asking. So I got angry at him and started telling him, Sean, you got to ask Peter before you just reach over and grab his food. And I went on for a minute or two. And believe it or not, as I was telling Pete Sean to, that he had to ask Peter, I had a spoon in my hand, and I reached over and took a scoop of Pete Sean's ice cream and ate it as I was telling him. And the kids just kind of stopped and looked at me. And I wondered, why are you guys looking at me like this? And they said, Dad, do you realize what you just did?
And see how bad you feel? This is just how
and bad. And I did. I felt terrible. I couldn't believe it.
Talk about doing one thing and saying one thing and doing another. So anyway, it was a good opportunity to just ask them for forgiveness. And I told them, hey, you know, I'm not perfect either. I want you to do this.
Sure, they would come up with ideas that weren't safe or whatever. But by and large, as long as you're there, work with them, treat their ideas with equal respect to your own, and just occasionally rein in some bounds, but by and large, they really respect being respected.
And the idea of the mind of Christ, some of you know I was a Montessori teacher, and one of the things that you do as you're preparing to be a Montessori teacher is you basically try and go through every possible scenario and figure out ahead of time how you're going to respond. And that way you're not caught off guard when you do get into a situation. You know, things like we talked about not pushing in the chair. It's a little thing, but you don't push in the chair in the classroom with your foot. Because you'll spend the rest of the year watching all the kids pushing chairs in with their feet and dropping things because it's too many things to do. And just the things that you think about ahead of time. And so when I would go to do it, I think, oh yeah, I can't do that. But I didn't have to wait until after to repent and figure out how to fix it. And I think that that applies to so many aspects of life.
You know, that's so important. And what she said about respecting, it's extremely... The other thing is, we need to teach our young people, our children, especially our junior high age kids or even elementary school, to think about the situation that can come up and what are you going to do, you know, how, and I think that really is helpful to them. What are you going to do if somebody wants you to go in and steal something in a store, just, you know, something quick and fast? And what are you going to do if somebody offers you a cigarette? Or it's really important to do that. And if you talk to them and respect them as a person, makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess it's kind of along think in advance in the midst of God.
That's right.
To help us think things out, not our and with fellow Christians. And we don't have to just rely on our own upbringing to come up with answers. We can kind of add insight into these situations that may come up. So we'll be led by the Spirit as a result. I'll stick it to that. You know, it seems like there's a natural kind of friction between teenagers or that time period of 13, 14, up through 22, 24, and parents maybe. Maybe not just parents, but maybe organized structure or whatever. There's a natural friction. And maybe some of it is good because sometimes that the child in that age group is trying to develop their own identity, try to think things out for themselves. But on the other hand, and so there's a lot of positive, they have a lot of energy. Hopefully it gets channeled properly. But so sometimes parents think about, oh no, we're heading in that teenage years. But on the other hand, you know, like you were saying, we try to foresee some of these situations that we know will come up. And then those children, you know, like Dan, I know Dan and Hannah are going to be incredible leaders within the youth group and can prevent a Columbine situation out there. See things and dip it in the butter. And U.S. News and World Report, I saw just recently how kids are being, kids, it's natural to have bullies in class of all kinds, whether you have intellectual bullies. Usually they're big physical kids who don't know how to use their supremacy in a positive way, so they put other people down, and that makes them feel good. And so, but, you know, as Christians, if we train our teenagers to realize, hey, this is a situation that will happen, be ready for it. You may not be the object of that person, be the victim of that bullying, but, you know, be ready. And those are people you can love right on the spot. Be ready for them.
It's interesting that you use that word, because I think that is probably one of the main themes of this chapter. It's about intellectual bullies and maybe even physical bullies at times, but it's about people trying to power over other people, even with ideas. Theme of this whole concept of the Spirit goes back to early part of chapter 2 where he talks about, I resolve to know nothing but Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And that is an idea that you cannot grasp except by the power of the Spirit. You can't understand that you're in the one down position, that you're coming from a position of weakness, that submission is the result of it. And it's something that, I mean, I think that's the whole theme of this section. Holding on to those things and valuing them will lead to life in relationships.